David, welcome to the show.
Wow, what an introduction and what a pleasure it is to be here. Thank you for the opportunity to live my mission, which is to empower others. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Why a billion? Like, how did that
I
start?
have to make a small correction. I always tell people it's over a billion.
Over a
Don't
billion.
limit me.
No, I'm not limiting you.
It's a really interesting story because, as you know, I lost everything.
Yes.
And at the very time that I made it all back, and I went to talk to my wife and I said, I adore you, I love you, and I'm going to get choked up, but I could have done this without you. And anything that you want, let me know. And she said, oh, I only want one thing. And I said, what's that? She goes, you need to take care of yourself. She goes, because your mission is to take care of other people. Your name, my mom named me David Meltzer, which means beloved servant. And she would always say when I was in trouble, live up to your name. So when I wasn't acting in the appropriate behaviors, live up to your name. You are the beloved servant. That's not a beloved servant. And so my wife said, you're born to serve other people, but you're not going to be able to unless you take care of yourself. And so I'm walking the beach the next morning. And right after that, my daughter, who's 12 at the time, her friend committed suicide. And it was like all these things were happening. The next morning, I wake up, we have this beach house. I'm walking the beach without my shoes on. And I'm the last faith-based person that God spoke to me. Like my calling, like I understand intuition and I'm purpose-driven, but I had a calling. Like, right? And if you don't believe in that shit,
You're
then
missing out and you're
it's,
missing your calling.
yeah. And you're also fooling yourself. And then you're scared because you're like, who's going to listen to me? But the best way I can describe it is God spoke to me and said, you are here to stop this problem of people killing themselves, of not being happy. You have the power to empower other people. So now the day before, I'm telling my wife, whatever you need, I'm gonna, do this. And she's saying to take care of yourself. And then this kid commits suicide. And now I'm gonna walk back to my house and tell my wife that God spoke to me and said that my mission of my human existence is to empower people to be happy. And you asked why over a billion? Because I'm a math guy and I had to have some sort of economic or quantitative proof to my wife that I hadn't gone insane with all the pressure and everything. So I came home and said, you're not going to believe this. God spoke to me on my walk. And my mission is going to be to empower over a billion people to be happy. I'm going to teach them how to make a lot of money, help a lot of people, and have a lot of fun because I've never met anyone that makes a lot of money, helps people with it, and has fun with it that isn't happy. And before you say anything, here's how I'm going to do it. I am going to empower or teach 1,000 people to teach 1,000 people to teach 1,000 people. 1,000 times a thousand is a million times a thousand is a billion. With my community, with my brand, and my capability, I can do this. I know in my lifetime, I can find 1,000 people like you that are going to empower 1,000 to empower 1,000. And it may not happen in my lifetime, but before I leave here, I'm going to leave those 1,000 that I know will empower 1,000 to empower 1,000 or more, which is over. And shockingly, my wife stayed with me again, didn't think I was crazy, and said, as long as you take care of yourself, I'll help you. And
Now,
so
where were you at this point, right? Like, had you structured anything and multiplied anything? I mean,
I
you
have
had
built my, I've started,
of course.
speaking and book writing. So we had lost everything in 2008. And so now the mission started in about 2013. I had recovered. So we had just bought this beach house, financially recovered, where I could buy once again whatever I want, be with who I want, when I want, with as long as I want. The community side of it hadn't started yet. That all started on my mission of all these shows and 200 days on the road again, with a specific mission. I always told my wife that, when you're mission driven, the commissions follow. And they all, the commissions always follow me, but I wasn't always mission based, or my mission was about the commissions and that didn't work. Mm-hmm. It proved mm-hmm. itself to be true. But yeah, there's two women in my life that, you know, I just am blessed. You know, my mom and my wife. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know it may not be in vogue to be what the kids called simp. I take it as a big compliment when my kids are like, "Dad, you're so simp over mom," which means whipped in my generation.
Yeah, yeah.
I take it as a huge compliment.
For sure.
And I also was simp on my mom. I'm a mama's boy, and she's passed, but I'm still a mama's boy. I'm a 57-year-old mama's boy, and I'm proud to be, you know, I don't know how many husbands out there, proud to be a husband who brags about the fact that I love being married. I love my wife. She is amazing. And she has brought out the best in me.
Yeah. Okay. So let's stop there a second, because I like the significance of your wife and your life is obviously the foundation of all things. How did you know when you met her? Like, how did you pick this such important character?
Crazy story. I moved to San Diego when I was 9.
Okay.
I'm sitting, I was being molested. So I didn't want to be in my bedroom. Yeah. So there, I was small, so there was like a bay window, and I asked my mom, because there was, my older stepbrother was much older.
Okay.
I was 9.
Okay.
So he's 18.
Okay.
So I asked her if I could sleep in the windowsill. So I used to hang out. She put like a pad down. Okay. It was a bay window.
Yeah.
You know, it was probably bigger than the other dude. I'm that small. But so this girl skateboards by my house. I just moved to San Diego, and I felt something at 9. I was like, wow. And I became friends with this girl. And later at sixth grade camp, I asked my best friend, because I was so infatuated with her. I asked my best friend to ask her to go steady at sixth grade camp.
Circle, which yes means or date. No, right?
Yeah.
Like, worse. Do you like me?
Yeah.
No, circle, please.
You feel me? So I was 12. And he said, no, tell him to ask me himself. And then my idiot friend embarrassed me. He's like, dude, she rejected, you know, and so then when I got home, like any good 12-year-old, I threw an egg at her and hit her in the back of the head. And so then her cousin was one of my best friends. I teased her, and when I was 13 and 14, I would ask her why her friends were prettier than her. I threw rocks at her because I liked her.
Yeah, of course. Right. That's what we do when we're that age. We don't.
So she stayed away from me, and this girl is the girl that I ended up marrying. But interesting enough, when you say, how did I choose her? When I was in law school, I came home, and she had always stayed away from me. I tried to go out with her, but it was very obvious. She didn't want to.
Yeah.
She looked sad. I came home from law school, and she was at a bar, and she didn't look like her normal self. And so I just went up to her, and I wasn't hitting on her, right, the normal idiot that I was.
Yeah.
And I just had a nice conversation. She told me her mom was dying, and we had a nice conversation. And she went back to the hospital the next day to see her mom, who was dying of cancer. And she said, you know, I ran into last night. He was really nice, David Meltzer. And her mom's like, isn't that that little shit that threw the egg at you? And then she said what I was doing, and her mom's last words on me were, you need to go out with him. And she said, well, he's in, because I was engaged in my last year of law school, he's engaged. And her mom then said, you need to go out with someone like him. And so then 3 years later, I'd broken up with my fiance. I was living in Florida, moving to California, in Mexico at a resort, and somebody pushed me into her.
Pushed you into her?
Yeah, crowded
in
bar in Mexico.
Oh,
I bounced out off of her, and as things had it, I tried to screw up as much as I could, but eventually she went out on a date with me, which was the best date of my life. And we ended up here now 28 years later.
Oh my gosh.
So when you said,
okay,
how
so
did I choose?
Okay, so for those of us that don't get this lucky story that the universe just keeps colliding you until you would say yes.
And I tried to screw it up many times, including after when I married.
Right.
Yeah.
And you guys went through a really hard time together.
Yeah.
When you lose everything.
Yeah.
Like, did you keep your relationship intact through that?
My wife.
Really?
Because I never knew. I loved her, but like, I had a lot of money.
Okay.
And here's a girl that may not have liked me when I was young.
Yeah.
And I always, in the back of my head, wondered, you know, I wonder how much my wife loves me compared to, like, I adore her.
Right.
And, you know, it was interesting because it really solidified. Like
you knew.
Like I couldn't even. I couldn't even explain how much faith he has. I kind of mentioned earlier, like there's this song by Andy Grammer called "You Saved My Life." The lyrics literally are about my relationship with my wife, and she. It doesn't even faze her. Like for her, it doesn't move her,
mm-hmm.
but it moves me because it's literally she saved my life.
Yeah.
Oh, and now we have like the most of. I heard somewhere, and I really think it's true. Everybody has three marriages in their life. Sometimes you're lucky to have them with the same person.
Yeah.
All
yeah,
three. Yeah.
I agree.
So I'm
that.
In my third marriage.
Oh, and that's the best one. Yes.
That's my wife said.
The best one.
It's
yes.
so good.
Yes.
Yes. And I'm blessed because not only. Inside is she one of the most beautiful people with so many, but like she's gorgeous,
yeah.
you know, like it's like an added bonus on top. I was telling him like, it drives me nuts being 57 years old and like be literally so attracted to your wife like you're a teenager.
It's such a gift, I mean, come on, the other yeah. could be true and who wants that, right? So there you go. Okay, so I love how you're like, okay, I'm going to help a billion people. You don't just say over a billion. You don't just say, you start doing the math. Right,
yeah.
Which gives it the action and the frameworks. Be like, okay, now I can take this tiny step, which then leads to this bigger step and exponentially grows. Like, how does that start? Because like you said, you didn't have a community in the beginning.
Yeah.
So what does that look like for somebody who's trying to build a community and doesn't have it?
So I started looking at my capabilities. So I'm
okay.
in the coaching world.
Yep.
I talk about expansion because I have a background in sports and yep. also in the service place of... Mostly athletes and military people want to transition,
mm-hmm.
so they'll come to me.
Okay.
And I call it expansion. So I've always been a person who looks at the skills, knowledge, and desires of people and align it with what's stable, what's doing well, and what you think is doing well.
Okay.
And so it's very mathematical in what I did. And so to that end, I started looking at my own capabilities. Mm-hmm. And I started to see how I could help people make a lot of money, help a lot of people, and have a lot of fun. So I created four different strategies to do this. So one was, what would I do every day as a non-negotiable in person?
In person.
Two, okay. on the phone. Three, via email. And then four, via social media.
Okay.
Which is an amplification of what you do in person on the phone and email as well. And so... I started to develop these strategies in person, on the phone, via email and social media, capturing my skills, my knowledge of who and what, and my desire, my frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And I started realizing that my frequency was my neighborhood. My frequency was my community. And that the more consistent I was in elevating and amplifying my frequency, the stronger my signal would be, the wider my spectrum would be, and the clearer the message would be.
Mm-hmm.
All three of those would gain, accelerate, aggregate, and compound exponentially the number of people in my neighborhood or my community.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, understanding physics, quantum physics, the actual metaphysics of things, and how energy multiplies mm-hmm. and aggregates and accelerates, I started to apply that into these specific categories or buckets in person, on the phone, via email, and social media. And I was very, very intentional, which is why I think I ended up as the chairman of Napoleon Hill Institute, because the one thing that everyone knows about Think and Grow Rich and Outwitting the Devil and Napoleon Hill is he truly is the seminal world personal and professional development leader in manifestation. In the
100%.
Ability of utilizing intention
mm-hmm.
or the belief, I call it the five levels, doing, saying, thinking, feeling, and believing
mm-hmm.
in alignment with what I desire, the coincidence of the coinciding of the universe. That's what Napoleon Hill was about.
Mm-hmm.
And so I applied all of this into neighborhood community building and started to do, say, think, feel, and believe in person, on the phone, via email, and social media, this idea that I was going to grow people that had the same frequency as me that want to make a lot of money, help a lot of people, and have a lot of fun.
Right. In 2013, when that's brand new,
yeah.
what is that activity? Because like I now know if you're in a town, I'll fly there to
Thank
meet you and to see what you're doing and to support that. And because
yeah.
the people you collect, I'm like, I just want to be a part of that energy and let's go because it recharges you so much. But that's now.
Yeah.
Let's back up a little bit. And what did it start like?
The first was just getting an audience.
Yeah.
People to see me. So I spoke.
Okay, you spoke on stage.
And every time that I spoke, and most of it was free.
Okay.
You know, I teach people, if you're starting out, yes, have a perceived value of $5,000.
Okay.
But make sure your bottom line is zero.
Okay.
And take anything.
Yep.
And I wish I would have at 2013, because social media wasn't the way it is today.
Right.
Because I really didn't start till later, about 10 years ago.
Okay.
In 15 with Gary Vee, who taught me a lot about what I should be doing. So what I did was step on stages and then stayed after and did meetups, Q&A, and book signings, because I did write books.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did 100 speeches that were 100 in my first year.
And 1 year, 365.
365. I would speak in front of anyone.
And were you calling to get those deals?
Yes,
obviously,
I interned.
They're not coming in.
No, so I traveled a lot for business because I ran a global sports marketing agency.
Yes.
So any college, EO, YPO, Chamber of Commerce, graduate schools, undergraduate, high schools.
Yep.
So basically, we would take my schedule and call in and say, hey, guess what? Dave Meltzer's coming to town, and he'd love to come and talk to your group, your class, your organization.
Okay.
And then they would say, you know, what's your budget? Well, we don't have a budget. Well, he's $5,000. They would say, go F off.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but they'd establish value that way.
Right.
And then they now were off of, should we have them come in? It's like, now we got them for free.
Yeah. Right, so how do we say no?
Right.
Because we just got a $5,000 value, and, like, we got to take care of it.
Exactly,
of
and a lot of people
right?
miss
so
that.
Establishing the value is so critical.
With the comfort and confidence, right, that I'm well worth it.
Yeah.
And ironically, it took a year, but I ended up ending the year with my first $25,000 speech.
Same year,
in December, because I literally learned through those 100, why am I limiting myself? I'm comfortable telling people I'm worth $25,000. Even if I'm speaking for free, I'm going to get a lot more gigs if they think they're getting $25,000 of value.
Right. Do the math. The math is happening.
And then it went to 50, then it went to 100. And over the years, but it started with speaking, but I spoke for the sake of building community, not for the sake of my ego.
Yep.
And one of the rules I learned about speaking, because I coach a lot of speakers, is one of the interesting things for new speakers like me was you have to realize that there's a big problem in your speaking, and it's the 10% rule. When you speak, you have to know that 10% of the people are going to love you no matter what. It's a matter of frequency. That's why I was speaking so much, because I was getting 10%
of
100.
Of everything. Okay.
Because they're at my frequency. Even though I thought I was good and I stuck comparatively to where I am today in 2025 at speaking.
Yes.
Like, I watch myself, not even in the same league.
Same.
Like, I watch myself now and I'm like, I'm good.
Yeah.
Like interviewing, like, I know I'm good, but back then I thought it was good and I wasn't. And so it's interesting because 10% love you no matter what, 10% hate you no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But what fools the beginning speakers is the 10% will come up to you and say, that was amazing. You changed my whole life. And you believe that.
Right.
But it's just frequency. It's the way you made them feel.
Right.
You're not a good speaker.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Yeah.
Your first year, you're not
a good
speaker.
Okay.
You might be good, but you're not that good. Anyway, to change someone's life, that's frequency. The interesting thing is it's over the years how you gain the
10%.
Exactly. The 10% of the 80, the 10% of the 80, and less of the 10% hate you.
Yeah.
That's because it's just frequency. I believe this, and someday I'm going to be big enough to do this. I believe I can step on a stage literally for 30 minutes and say one word, like the. And for a half an hour, just say the, and 10% of the people will come up to me and say, that was amazing. How you showed patience and discipline, whatever they see,
whatever,
but it's going to make them
see
feel good.
They're mirroring themselves on you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now you have no chance of getting the other 80%, and the 10% that hate you are going to hate you even more.
Right.
They might actually walk out.
They might walk out.
But I teach the lesson of frequency because I use the understanding of the strength of the signal, the spectrum of the signal, and the clarity of the message of my frequency. Where people fall off is, I'm really good at being not just vulnerable, not just transparent, but I'm at my frequency.
So, and how do you stay at your frequency? Because
practice.
Things bounce us off of it all the time.
Yeah, it's practice. So for
practice.
Me, it's knowing my center.
Okay.
And knowing that when I'm off center, I stop.
Okay.
And I drop to center, back to the baseline. I'm very oriented into a plateau and grow status of anything that I'm looking to do, subject matter, topic, or expertise-wise.
Okay.
I know my center in golf. I know my center in my relationship with my wife. I know my center when I'm speaking. I know when I'm coaching. I know my center. I know in the flow where I am. So I'm elevating my awareness to what's interfering with. So, and this is all relative to existentialism, to actually God's code or Moses' code, which is I am. I think this paradigm shift is so interesting because it's the key to everything that I do. I used to seek, I'll be happy when.
Right.
And, you know, instead
of... I think that's a growth pattern we all go through.
Of course, you have to.
Yes.
Well, there's a quantum shift for women. It's 28 to 38. Men, it's 38 to 48. Normally, there's some exceptions.
Okay.
But this quantum shift occurs between this is what I think I am or this is what I want others to think I am to I am, what am I doing to interfere with it?
Yeah.
And this is a big paradigm shift because I am probably one of the best people at working this idea of the infinite.
He is the best, not probably. Yeah. We're scratching probably.
I am.
You,
and yes. I spend all my time, only minutes and moments outside of it, figuring out what am I doing to interfere with it. So relationships, health, mindset. I'm looking at the infinite as me. I'm a co-creator, a commander of the infinite. And so in order to have all the intelligence, intuition, inspiration, energy that exists for all of us, because we're all part of it, mm-hmm. I'm actually focused in on not going to get it. I don't go get or find anything. I'm focused solely on what am I doing to interfere with it. When I figure it out, I spend minutes and moments. See, every problem that exists in the human experience has its solution inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's called a resolution, a resolution, because it's already there. It's just a lapse of time until you find the resolution.
Yeah.
The solution's in the problem. Problem exists. Most people don't realize the solution's already here. It's just the lapse of time before I find the resolution. So what my goal is to minimize or shorten the distance of resistance between the solution and the resolution. So I use wisdom and faith to shorten the distance of resistance.
Give me an example.
Really easy. So anytime I'm afraid, mm-hmm. someone cuts me off, my insecurities are elevated, I have a need to be right, offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, or worried. I'll use worried as an example because worry to me is the most obvious duplicative interference that's created because worrying not only interferes with where you want to be or better, it actually manifests or it creates.
Vibration. It creates,
you're wishing for what you don't want when you worry.
Yes.
So my example is, when I was in law school, I studied trust in estates. There's a thing called the rules of perpetuity, which is a life and being plus 81 years. I had, for whatever reason, the biggest blame block ever. I could not, and I told myself, I can't learn this. I don't understand it. We've all been there for some subject matter.
Yes.
So in law school, I sat there at night, instead of studying and learning the rules of perpetuity, I sat there worrying, saying, I hope it's not on the test. Guess what the first question on the test was?
Rules of perpetuity.
Exactly. So years later, mm-hmm. I haven't practiced law, right? I took the law bar only because my mom made me and passed it. But I've never been practicing.
That's mama's boy. Just to let you know, you take that test, son.
Exactly. Finish the process. I did. But here I am 30 years later proving this point because I like to teach it.
Yeah.
So I went on the internet to learn the rules of perpetuity. Obviously not as much of a law student as I was 30 years previous. It took me 15 minutes because I shortened the distance of resistance. And I wasn't worried about, right. I'm intentional in a definiteness of purpose that I was smart enough and told myself, I am smart enough. I know this.
Mm-hmm.
What am I doing to interfere with what I already know, knowing that I would forget every lesson that's ever been learned and I have the power to remember it. So I just remembered, recollected, and reminded myself of it and cleared the interference.
Wow.
And you can do that with everything in your life, not just the rules of perpetuity.
Everything, everything. Okay, so let's say somebody's listening, they set this intention, and their actions aren't lining up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do we do to help them?
Well, we need to look at how they're spending their time, especially consistently. And
okay.
So we look at the activity. Remember, your days are just full of activities. And the behaviors are only determined to be good or bad if the behavior is aligned with where you want to be, it's good.
Yep.
If it's not aligned where you want to be,
it's bad.
If it interferes with where you want to be. So first, just understanding that I'm the accumulation of my behaviors. Consistent behaviors have three components that non-consistent behaviors don't have, which is acceleration, aggregation, and compounding impact.
Compounding. That's a big one on
all
everything.
Three. I like, yes. If I desire something, what are three things I'd like? I'd like to aggregate what I wanted. I'd like it to be accelerated. And I'd like to compound that.
Amen.
So that's the way that energy works.
Yep.
And so intention is looking at the activity and saying, in what am I doing, saying, thinking, feeling, believing, aligned with where I want to be or better? Then I know these are good behaviors. If it's interfering with it, then I want to shorten the distance of that behavior and resistance created by that behavior by realigning it with a good behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And the more consistent I am with behavior, the more aggregation, acceleration, and compounding outcomes or coincidences coinciding I'll get in my life. And so this mathematical spiritual perspective that I have is quantitative and easier for people to create framework in order to practice it, knowing that even at the simplest things are difficult because the simple things to do consistently are simple not to do.
Super simple not to do. And we're on autopilot. Like so many of us are on autopilot. So how do you recommend somebody interrupting that autopilot so they become aware and then they can set intention and execute from there?
Great question. I created this thing called Cancel, Clear, Connect. And
okay.
It's aligned with how the conscious continuum works. So our cellular structure has a memory. And it has a short lifespan. It's a short-term memory. It's 24 hours.
Okay.
That's why practice is so important.
Yeah.
And so the things you practice every day, Gladwell, so many people have written about
10,000 hours.
Think about golf, right? If you practice every day, you don't have to be the best athlete.
Right.
It's going to send a message to your subconscious by doing it every day. This is where the confused idea that it takes 21 days to create a habit. No, it takes a minimum of 21 days to create a habit. So I do something for 21 days every single day. It now is in my subconscious mind.
Okay.
The subconscious, so there's about 10,000 new thoughts a day. We want to control those inputs. So if something's not aligned with where we want to be or better, we want to say out loud, cancel.
Okay.
You want to stop it from coming in.
Cancel.
Yeah. And if you can't say it out loud because people think you're crazy, say it inside your head. Cancel. So, you know, Nick was talking about missing a plane. He would say, oh my God, we're going to miss, you forgot your wallet, you're going to miss the plane.
Cancel.
Right there.
Yep.
That's not going anywhere anymore.
Yep.
Now, in the subconscious, you have about 40,000 of the same thoughts every day. 80% of them are negative. They're genetically and energetically inherited. Unfortunately, they're also repetitive.
Yes.
So we're fighting a really negative process.
Yeah.
So for me, if there is something that I canceled and it keeps coming back, I know it's in my subconscious. So now what I want to do is clear it.
Okay.
So I say clear it. Clear it. So, you know, I keep having the
like,
same.
So people who are trying to diet, right? And
right.
They like keep wanting sweets. And every single time that thought comes up, clear it.
Clear it. Exactly. Because in the subconscious, I had a problem with overeating because I had food insecurity growing up. 6 kids, single mom.
Oh.
My mom made a big mistake by treating us to 2 big large french fries at McDonald's by putting it into a bowl.
Oh, geez.
And then with 5 boys and a girl, it was like, eat as fast. Well, that's a really bad
program.
Energetic program. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to clear that. And it took me a while. Now, here's the biggest one is that we have genetic and energetic inheritance in our DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why if somebody is an alcoholic and they quit drinking for 21 days, it's not over.
Right.
Because it's genetically and energetically inherited. It's coded, hard-coded into your unconscious competency.
That's why it's a continuous repetition of the opposite.
And it could last lifetimes, which is how you break the genetic chain, the genetic inheritance and the energetic inheritance. That's why if someone can stay sober for their lifetime, much greater chance their kids will be sober.
Yes.
It's more than just behavioral.
Next generation.
It's inherited down. So understanding the things that you can't get rid of, like alcoholism,
What
there is a way to shift your energy and speed up the process. And I call that connecting.
Okay.
And so what I do is let me take my drinking, for example.
Yep.
I picture me drunk.
Okay.
And I, with my eyes closed by myself.
Yeah.
And I find a light in it.
Okay.
And I physically cover it with light.
Mm-hmm.
Finding light, love, and lessons and just healing it right there. And then in this mind's eye. Same, I picture what already I love, like a picture of my wife or my family or Bananas Fosters or something. I just inherently, it's full of light.
Yeah.
Well, then I take the pure light over the force light and I make one big ball of light, holding both what scares me the most, what I hate the most, mm-hmm. these things with what I love the most. Now, remember how energy works, right? It finds a resolution between it.
Right.
Just like heat and cold, right? It's going to find the medium of it. Well, once I have that light equalized, I then hold it over me until I actually feel my energy shift. And I do this. There was one issue in my life 9 years. Every day I spend 15 minutes doing this energetic connection work mm-hmm. to heal my unconscious competency so that it would just go away. And it was an energetic healing. One of the processes, not for everybody,
but
canceling and clearing it for everybody. Wow. I promise you it works. Takes 0.1 seconds. If you're not into the woo-woo energy connecting, fair enough. You can deal with your own unconscious competencies the way you want to. But I know the conscious and subconscious methodologies work.
Yeah. So everybody listening today, like, share your story. It's like, do this exercise and let us know how it's going for you.
Yeah. And also, I'd like for your entire community, I will sign my book, send it to you. It has all this stuff in it. Pay for shipping. Don't worry. Just email me directly. Put in the notes, david@dmeltzer.com. I'll do that for your entire community.
Absolutely amazing. Okay. So today we had a most amazing episode, all kinds of things for us to sit, listen to it twice. No one's judging. How do we get more of you?
You know, the fastest and easiest way is just email me.
Okay.
I actually respond to all my emails.
Amazing.
If you don't get my email, david@dmeltzer.com, Google me. I'm lucky you'll find me on every platform, David Meltzer, like Seltzer with an M. David@dmeltzer.com. It's a blessing to be here, like I said. Thank you for the opportunity. And I look forward to having you on my show.